necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WGCH Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Good Living Show. If you are tuning into this for the first time, you could be on one of two radio stations. Maybe you listen to this station all the time and found a new voice. This is the Good Living Show, and we come to you every other week, Tuesday morning, bringing you a new perspective sometimes, a new idea or a new person. And today I have met a new friend. Her name is Fran Pastore, and she's the founder and CEO of the Women's Business Development Council. And we are welcome to have her. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me, Michelle.
So happy to have you. The reason I'm even here is because I felt like, you know, the empowerment of women was so strong at the place that I came to work, and really felt like even in the 1908 when the Osborne was founded, wow. It was founded, you know, on behalf of a woman and her idea and her philanthropic ideas to bring women more power, actually. So I love it when I can have a powerful woman on here that we can talk about empowering other women. So welcome again.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So talk to me a little bit about the Women's Business Development Council.
So the Women's Business Development Council is a nonprofit organization that I started in 1997. The catalyst behind me launching the Women's Business Development Council was the fact that Connecticut was the only state in the country that didn't have a resource for women entrepreneurs.
Wow.
Yeah. So there was some, I'll give you a little history lesson.
Sure.
Given it's the 100th anniversary of a woman's right to vote. And let's not forget that not all women received the right to vote. But a little history lesson going back about 30 years or so. It was 1988 when a law was passed in Congress called the Women's Business Ownership Act of 1988. And that law did four things. One of the most important things that it did was it gave women a right to access capital in their own name for commercial purposes without needing a male co-signer.
In what year?
1988.
Wow.
So imagine it's 1987 and you're one of these beautiful little shops right here on the avenue, owned and operated by a woman, a coffee shop, a nail salon, a restaurant, a jewelry shop, and you decide you want to expand. You've been in business for 10 years. You have beautiful P&Ls. Your credit is great. You've been doing business with XYZ Bank for 20 years, and you go to get a loan, and they say, come back with your father, your husband, your uncle, your brother, or basically any person with testosterone the age of 16 years or older. And so that law, which was advocated for by many, many women and some men as well, was eradicated in 1997. So that was one of the things that the Women's Business Ownership Act did. Another thing that it did was it established a grant program within the SBA that was targeted at overcoming obstacles to economically empowering women through entrepreneurship. And they were very small grants that were awarded to local nonprofits in each state. And that was in 1988. And by 1997, I learned that Connecticut did not have said grant funds.
Okay.
And so at the time, I was a single unemployed mom with two kids. I had a tribe of girlfriends that were helping me, highly educated, very successful in businesses of all kinds. And they helped me. They became my tribe and my community, and they helped me launch the Women's Business Development Council, and we accessed those federal funds. And here we are almost 23 years later.
So talk to me about, amazing. I knew some of that history, but the whole Connecticut piece is really enlightening. Talk to me about, I'm a woman in business. I want to, or I have an idea, or I have something that I want to do. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I'm passionate about it, and I want to move forward with it. Do I come to you and say, hey, what can you do to help me?
Sure, you could. You should.
Okay.
You would want to.
And how would we access that help? And what would be the next steps to talk to you?
Sure. So the majority of our clients are either launching new businesses or really the majority have been in business for some time.
Right.
Most of them are sole proprietors and they have typically less than two or three employees. So these are really small micro businesses. All of our clients are from Connecticut with a small percentage being from Westchester County. But the way you would come to WBDC is your point of entry is a phone call or an email. And I'm either in business and I need to do XYZ, or I want to start a business and I need to evaluate my idea or my plan. And you'd come in and you'd meet with a business counselor and we would assess where you are and how best we could help you. Geographically, we have three offices. We're in Stamford, which is our headquarters. We are in New Haven County in Derby, Connecticut, and we are in New London County in New London, Connecticut. And so the profiles of those communities and the demographics of the women who come to us are very varied, but our clients all share one very important trait, is that they are women who are interested in being economically self-reliant, economically independent, and they are ready to take the next step in their lives to make that dream a reality. And our goal is to educate them to the best of our ability, provide them with the training, the knowledge, and the community of women that they need to foster and cultivate that idea or to help them scale up with the right resources.
Right. So I was just going to ask that. You said the word. So these women become then your clients.
Yes.
And then you have counselors and
business trainers.
Okay.
I like to think of WBDC as a post-secondary training institution, because everything about what we do is education driven, with the concept of risk, mitigating the risks to starting up and scaling up. What do you need to know? I might be a great baker, and oftentimes people that are in the idea stage will come to us and say, I have this great idea. I really love baking pies, and I go to the farmers markets all over Connecticut, and everybody says I'm a great pie maker. Okay, but what do you know about running a business? Are you making money? And so we typically start with the end in mind. Do you need to work? Do you have to work? How much money do you want to make? What are your personal financial goals? And so about 80% of what we do is all focused on marketing, finance, business development. Mm-hmm. How do you write a business plan? How do you develop a marketing plan? How do you test the integrity of your idea? You think it's great in your head, but we're going to help you walk through the phases on paper. The common thread among our clients and the biggest barrier to success we often hear is access to capital. Many times it's access to confidence. And so that's where WBDC, I really believe, that's where we make our biggest impact.
I was just going to say that. Years ago, I had a business, which I still think I will do when I retire. It was just too time-consuming to work. But there was something that somebody kept telling me, and when I was pricing things, they're like, you are not even considering your labor and what you've done and how you've done it. And it really made me think that I was giving it away.
Yes.
You know?
And you probably were.
I was, and, you know, had people telling me that you could have been successful or this or that or the other. But I went a different direction and I'm very happy with the direction I went. But it is true that confidence level to think that my time wasn't worth as much as somebody else's time or whatever. So I think that is probably, you know, I can imagine that's one of the biggest almost failures that people would have or barriers people would have.
Absolutely. We say that we provide confidence and competencies, not necessarily in that order. Mm-hmm. So I would say that the confidence piece is around pricing products and services is something that we spend a lot of time on. Mm-hmm. I mean, we as women just completely and totally undervalue ourselves and often tend to second guess ourselves because, you know, over the last 100 years, our role in society has changed so dramatically. And just like anything else, the shift, although we've made so much progress, I say that there's so much residual societal pressure on us to continue to conform. And it's kind of like a rubber band effect, you know? Mm-hmm. So if we look at the access to capital issue, that law was passed 31 years ago, 1988, 32 years ago. It still takes a woman an average of 6 attempts at securing a bank loan more than her male counterpart. Hmm. And it's not because there is an agenda. It's because there's an implicit bias, one. And two, I would say that based on from what I see at WBDC, a lack of confidence in wanting to understand the complexities of understanding your finances. And so that's another right. area where we work with women on. As I said a few minutes ago, about 80% of our education is focused on entrepreneurial training and the skills you need to launch and scale a business. But about 20 or 25% of what we do is personal finance. So when someone comes in and they've been in business for a year and I need money. No, maybe let's start with your personal budget. And, you know, before you think you need a bank loan, right. let's talk about what you are really earning and take the time. No one's saying that you have to become an accountant. No one's saying you have to become a finance expert. But understand what's coming in, what's going out, and understand how you're pricing your product or service to make sure that you're leveraging your assets and right. get comfortable and feel good about owning your worth, right, and owning your value.
And we see that so often. We are in a business or in a shop or in a restaurant. We're thinking, oh, my God, look at all these people. This is a sure thing. And then 6 months later, it's gone. And you're like, what happened? They had so many customers.
Yes. Tell me about it. You know, my office, our headquarters is on Bedford Street in Stamford. And beneath us, in the last 9 years, there have been at least 5 businesses. Mm. Everything from an olive oil shop to a sneaker running shoe shop to a woman's lingerie shop. And it mystified me. It absolutely mystified me that we were right upstairs. And no one, and even when we went downstairs to talk to folks and say, hey, we can help you, no. So there is also the entrepreneurial kind of mindset that one needs to really embrace when they're going into business for themselves.
I was going to ask that. And sometimes it could be a pride thing, mm-hmm. like, you know, I don't need the help. And sometimes it's a skeptical thing. Mm-hmm. Like, what do they want from me? You know, yes. I've worked so hard for this, yes. but you can work yourself so hard till you have to shut a door. So how do you get over that when somebody's like, oh, what are you going to take from me? You know, how much do I have to give you?
Well, the answer is nothing, because we don't really charge for anything.
Right.
So there's just a handful of programs that we actually charge for. But I think that's another in many ways, it's a little bit of self-sabotage. You know, we're very blessed in Connecticut right now to have so many resources. In addition to WBDC, there are so many resources for small businesses. And so to not utilize those services, which, you know, 80% of them are, 90% are free of charge. So they are being provided, you know, our services are provided by the federal and state government and the generosity of donors and investors who want to support women, mm-hmm. Both private and from the corporate sector. And so I would think that you would want to learn everything and soak up everything you need to know, not just about your industry and becoming the best baker or the best IT person or the best AV person, but you want to learn the business. You want to understand business. And if it's there for the taking, make the time and take the time to get that education, because you owe it to yourself and your business.
Right. And we even see it, you know, whether you can believe the reality shows, but you even see it when somebody comes into a business and they're, it seems like they've got it all together. They can make the best whatever it is, but they can't run the business, and the money is just flying out the door faster than it's coming in. So, gosh, what a great resource right here locally. We're going to go to a break, but I want you to tell Fran Pastore, please tell us how they would get a hold of you, mm-hmm. Real quick. And we're going to link this up, and we're going to say it a lot. So how would we get a hold of you?
CTWBDC.org. Or you can call the main number, 203-353-1750. Or you can email info@ctwbdc.org. Someone will get back to you right away.
Well, we will be back in a minute with Fran Pastore from the Women Business Development Council on The Good Living Show with Michelle Thomas.
When my husband was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, his doctor told us that he would soon need care and attention. They also told me it's important that I have support and not be Colin's only caretaker. We found a wonderful solution here in Fairfield County for both of us with Osborne Home Care. Their in-home personal care staff is specially trained to care for people with all forms of memory loss. And Hope, the registered nurse case manager from Osborne Home Care, is so good at anticipating his needs. She is also ready to help if his care plan needs to be adjusted. It's exactly what we both need to manage Colin's condition.
Osborne Home Care is an affiliate of the Osborne, the area's premier senior living community. Visit osbornhomecare.org or call 888-9-OSBORNE for more information. Osborne Home Care, Connecticut, license number 0000933.
Welcome back to the Good Living Show. We've got a great guest, and I am just on the edge of my seat listening and learning more about the Women's Development Business Development Council with Fran Pastore. And, you know, Fran, we talked a little bit about this on the break, but there must be a ton of advocacy that goes along with this, ton of getting people aware and making people understand what you're doing from the individual client all the way up to legislation. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned about a wonderful event coming up, and I'd want to hear more. So let's talk about that.
Sure. So April 1st is Women-Owned Business Day at the State Capitol. And this year, we usually get about 250 people attend. This year, we're really going to be focusing on two very important things. One is, as I mentioned earlier, the centennial of a woman's right to vote. And we are going to be hosting Patricia Russo from the Yale Campaign School, who will be our keynote speaker. And Pat will be talking about how that happened, how women got the right to vote. And again, I'll say, let us remember our sisters of color who did not get the right to vote when white women were granted the right to vote 100 years ago. And the importance of advocacy of getting to that point and that place and time. We're also going to be sharing with small business owners how the newest legislation around paid family leave will be implemented and how they will be and we're going to kind of demystify a lot of the fright around that legislation. So in the last legislative session, one of the best things that happened, there were two things that are really important that happened. One was minimum wage. The other was paid family leave. Small business owners from around the state have shared with us that they are terrified. Mm-hmm. This is another tax. This is another this. This is mere bureaucracy. I don't have time to deal with this. If someone's out on a paid leave, I have to keep their job open. How am I going to fill that job? How am I going to get that work done? So I'm a vice chair of the Paid Family Medical and Insurance Leave Board in Connecticut. I was appointed by Senate Majority Leader Bob Duff, and I'm really proud of this because mm-hmm. it's something that is so very much so important for small businesses. I have a staff of 16. I've had to deal with people getting sick and having extended family leave and not knowing how to do with it, not knowing how to deal with it. And so Connecticut passed paid family leave in the last session, and there's a huge impact on businesses, both large and small. So we're going to have a panel of experts from the private sector and the public sector. And by then, Connecticut will have hired a CEO of the Paid Family Leave Insurance Authority. Oh. And she will be speaking as well to talk about what this means for your business. So the nutshell version of the paid family leave is that every single person in the state will be paying into a fund. Mm-hmm. Through their own paycheck. And I don't like to invoke any fear, but think of it like Social Security, where you will be paying a small percentage of your payroll into this fund, and you will be able to access up to 12 weeks of paid leave, and in some cases, 14 weeks of paid leave, and your employer is obligated to hold your job open. And this, there's another piece of this bill that is very much relevant to sole proprietors, because sole proprietors have an option to opt in. And mm-hmm. that's where a lot of fear among our clients resides, is that many of our clients are sole proprietors or they have less than three employees. And to be hit with a 12-week departure is a lot to deal with. And so we're going to be sharing how you can handle that, how you might be able to address that.
Right, which is great. So my employer is in New York, mm-hmm. which we have already
yes.
had this. And I think it's so important for business owners to go so they're able to explain it to their employees
yes.
as well.
Yes.
Because although my employer's large, so it was very well explained and our HR department did a lovely job with it, I can see where a small business owner, you know, may portray their feelings to their employee of how they're
yes.
displeased with this. And then the employee thinks, oh, they just don't want to take care of us. That's all.
Exactly.
So I think going to something like this, to hearing how not only it will affect you, benefit or otherwise, and then how you can explain it to your employees is so important to keep everybody, you know, feeling like this is something that is done for a reason.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. I'm really proud of Connecticut, and we modeled, you know, this is not, we did not reinvent the wheel. We modeled our legislation on New York and Massachusetts mm-hmm. and other states that have this in place, and we're going to do our best job during the implementation phase to make sure that we take the best practices that we've seen and craft them in a way that they work for the state of Connecticut.
Right. That is really, really good to hear that we're dedicating some time to that, because it's an important issue. And it really has. When I look at our staff, and I have 400 employees that report up to me.
Oh, my gosh.
And not directly, thank goodness, but, you know,
it's a lot.
Ultimately. And when I sit down and talk to these men and women about things that are available to them, it is much appreciated mm-hmm. that there are benefits out there that they can take if there's a family member that gets sick, or they themselves, or, you know, to spend some time with a newborn baby, a lot of stuff. So I think on both sides, I can see where a business owner would be like, oh, this, you know, I've got one employee. What, they're going to be gone for 14 weeks. How in the world am I going to survive to pay them and then have to backfill somebody with it? But I'm glad that they're getting some resources to help them kind of work through that. So
right.
Kudos.
And just for clarity, they won't have to pay. You know, the money will come out of the insurance fund.
Right.
So just for clarity, and I will not go into all the detail.
Well, see, we learned something right there.
Yeah, it's not coming out of anybody's pocket. It will come out of the fund that's being paid into.
Right.
And so, you know, there are all kinds of actuarial calculations that have been made, again, based on what's happened in other states. But that does not nothing to really allay the fears of small business owners. And so that's what we're setting out to do on April 1st. And you can register for that on our website, www.ctwbdc.org. And when you visit our website, you'll also get to see all of the programs and services that we're offering. Our mentorship program is there if you're in business and you're looking to grow your business, or you have a specific business challenge. We can match you with a mentor. Our financial education program that will help you get work on your personal as well as your business finances, and all of the programs and services that will help you build a scalable, sustainable business to help you become a success.
Awesome. I'm going to go over the website real quick, because it really is CT for Connecticut, and then the initials of
WBDC.org. CTWBDC.org.
Because really important stuff we're talking about here, and I can see where somebody could be driving or something. So please, we will put it up on our link to our website, www.theosborne.org, on the home care section. So so let's get into some other stuff.
Sure.
Fran, you've got a long list of things on here, and I'm going to allow you to talk about something that you want to talk about. There's a lot of things overseas. There's a lot of things that seem that they're very close to your heart.
Mm-hmm.
So let's touch a little bit on that.
Sure. Well, for me, I'm the mother of two daughters, and I really care about, I'm very passionate about the economic equity of women and making sure that we are taking care of the young women that are out there, both domestically and abroad, to make this world a healthier and better place. We know that when women's voices are included, the dynamic around the table changes, and we see that constantly. One of my favorite examples is the Uber debacle in 2018, where there were so many incidents of rape and attacks and sexual assaults. And come to find out that there were few, if any, women on the Uber board that participated in the structure and building of the company. And so you mentioned reality TV earlier, and I think about Kevin O'Leary on Shark Tank, who talks all the time about why it's so important to invest in companies that are women-led because of the perspective that we bring. And so I've done some traveling around the world and around the country to help other women who don't have the resources we have here in the United States and in Connecticut, to help them get the training and the education that they need to help them become more financially secure through entrepreneurship.
That is pretty amazing. So can you tell us a story of something?
Sure. I think probably my most moving experience that I had was my very first experience, which was 10 years ago. I went to Rwanda, and it was at the time the genocide. I think it was about 15 years after the genocide. And I worked with genocide survivors to help them open up the very first ice cream parlor ever in Rwanda.
Wow.
I was so proud to be part of an initiative that was led by a wonderful organization based in New York City, the Business Council for Peace. They work in formerly war-torn regions around the world to help entrepreneurs build a better community. They don't specifically focus on women, but many of their clients, many of the people that they work with are women. And their whole concept is that where there's less violence, there are more jobs. And so I was part of a mission through the Business Council for Peace and Blue Marble Ice Cream. You might see Blue Marble Ice Cream in your grocery store. I think a couple of grocery stores locally here carry it. Blue Marble Ice Cream is an entrepreneurial endeavor led by two women. So it's a women-owned business in Brooklyn, New York. And it's an ice cream parlor, and then they manufacture their ice cream, and it's you can buy it in the grocery stores now. So those resources came together to help genocide survivors develop a business around something in life that is very sweet, and that is ice cream. And that was probably the most exciting and moving business that I can think of helping. And fast forward 10 years later, that business is still in business.
That is amazing. Fran, this has been a great conversation, and we will link everything to our website. We're going to put this link out so you can listen to this again. It has been enlightening and educational, and I can't wait to learn more. So we will see you back here in 2 weeks with another great guest. But for now, we're going to leave you with Fran Pastore and Michelle Thomas on The Good Living Show.
Thank you, Michelle.
AM 1490 and FM 105.5 WGCH Greenwich.
Rules clash, U.S. economy hailed. I'm John Trout. First, this. The U.S. Supreme Court has rejected a bid by the Democratic-controlled House to fast-track consideration of their appeal, seeking a definitive ruling that Obamacare does not violate the U.S. Constitution. Senator Chuck Schumer says he's going to attempt to alter plans laid by Senator Mitch McConnell in President Trump's impeachment trial.
Before this awful resolution is put on the floor, for a vote,